And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, If a person sins and commits a trespass against the Lord by lying to his neighbor about what was delivered to him for safekeeping, or about a pledge, or about a robbery, or if he is extorted from his neighbor, or if he has found what was lost and lies concerning it, and swears falsely, in any one of these things that a man may do in which he sins, then it should be, because he has sinned and is guilty, that he should restore what he has stolen, or the thing which he has deceitfully obtained, or what was delivered to him for safekeeping, or the lost thing which he found, or all that about which he has sworn falsely, he should restore its full value, add one-fifth more to it, and give it to whomever it belongs, on the day of his trespass offering. He shall bring his trespass offering to the Lord, a ram without blemish from the flock, with your valuation as a trespass offering to the priest. So he shall make atonement for him before the Lord, and he shall be forgiven for any one of these things that he may have done in which he trespasses. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Command Aaron and his sons, saying, This is the law of the burnt offering. The burnt offering shall be on the hearth, upon the altar, all night until morning, and the fire of the altar shall be kept burning on it. The priest shall put it on his linen garment, and his linen trousers he shall put on his body, and take up the ashes of the burnt offering which the fire has consumed on the altar. He shall put them beside the altar. He shall take off his garment, and put on other garments, and carry the ashes outside the camp to a clean place. And the fire on the altar shall be kept burning on it. It shall not be put out, and the priest shall burn wood on it every morning, and lay the burnt offering in order on it. And he shall burn on it the fat of the peace offerings. A perpetual fire shall burn on the altar, it shall never go out. This is the law of the grain offering. The sons of Aaron shall offer it on the altar before the Lord. He shall take from it his handful of fine flour of the grain offering, with its oil and all the frankincense which is on the grain offering, and shall burn it on the altar for a sweet aroma as a memorial to the Lord. The remainder of it Aaron and his sons shall eat. With unleavened bread it shall be eaten in a holy place. In the court of the tabernacle of meeting they shall eat it. It shall not be baked with leaven. I have given it to them as their portion of my offerings made by fire. It is most holy, like the sin offering and the trespass offering. All the males among the children of Aaron may eat it. It shall be a statute forever in all your generations concerning the offerings made by fire to the Lord. Everyone who touches them must be holy. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, This is the offering of Aaron, his sons, which they shall offer to the Lord beginning on the day which he is anointed. One-tenth of an ephah of fine flour as a daily grain offering, half of it in the morning and half of it at night. It shall be made in a pan with oil. When it is well mixed, you shall bring it in, and the baked pieces of the grain offering you shall offer for a sweet aroma to the Lord. The priest from among his sons, who is anointed in his place, shall offer it. It is a statute forever to the Lord. It shall be wholly burnt. For every grain offering for the priest shall be wholly burnt. It shall not be eaten. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak unto Aaron and his sons, saying, This is the law of the sin offering, in the place where the burnt offering is killed. The sin offering shall be killed before the Lord. It is most holy. The priest who offers it for sin shall eat it. In a holy place it shall be eaten, in the court of the tabernacle of meeting. Everyone who touches its flesh must be holy, and when its blood is sprinkled on any garment, you shall wash that on which it was sprinkled in a holy place. But the earthen vessel in which it was boiled shall be broken. And if it is boiled in a bronze pot, it shall be both scoured and rinsed in water. All the males among the priests may eat it. It is most holy. But no sin offering from which any of the blood is brought into the tabernacle meeting to make atonement for the holy place shall be eaten. It shall be burnt in fire. Chapter 7. Likewise is the law of the trespass offering. It is most holy. In the place where they killed the burnt offering, they shall kill the trespass offering, and its blood he shall sprinkle all around the altar. He shall offer it from all its fat, the fat tail, the fat that covers the entrails, the two kidneys, and the fat that is on them by the flanks. The fatty lobe attached to the liver above the kidneys he shall remove. And the priest shall burn them on the altar, as an offering made by fire to the Lord, is a trespass offering. Every male among the priests may eat it. It shall be eaten in a holy place. It is most holy. The trespass offering is like the sin offering. There is one law for them both. The priest who makes atonement with it shall have it. And the priest who offers anyone's burnt offering, that priest shall have for himself the skin of the burnt offering which he has offered. Also every grain offering that is baked in the oven and all that is prepared in the covered pan or in the pan shall be the priest who offers it. Every grain offering mixed with oil or dry shall be belong to the sons of Aaron, as one as much as the other. This is the law of the sacrifice of peace offerings, which he shall offer to the Lord. If he offers it for a thanksgiving, he shall offer with it the sacrifice of thanksgiving, unleavened cakes mixed with oil, unleavened wafers anointed with oil, or cakes of finely blended flour mixed with oil. Besides the cakes as his offering, he shall offer leavened bread with the sacrifice of thanksgiving of his peace offering. And from it, he shall offer one cake from each as a heave offering to the Lord. It shall belong to the priest who sprinkles the blood of the peace sacrifice. The flesh of the sacrifice of his peace offering for thanksgiving shall be eaten in the same day as it offered. He shall not leave any of it until morning. But the sacrifice of his offering is a vow or voluntary offering. It shall be eaten the same day that he offers it on the sacrifice. But on the next day, the remainder of it, also may be eaten. The remainder of the flesh of the sacrifice on the third day must be burned with fire. And if any of the flesh of the sacrifice of his peace offerings is eaten at all the third day, it shall not be accepted, nor shall it be imputed to him. Whoever offers it shall be an abomination, and whoever the person who eats of it shall bear guilt. The flesh that touches any unclean thing shall not be eaten. It shall be burned with fire. And as with the clean flesh, all who are clean may eat of it. But the person who eats the flesh of the sacrifice of the peace offering that belongs to the Lord, while he is unclean, that person shall be cut off from his people. Moreover, the person who touches any unclean thing, such as a human uncleanness, or any unclean beast, or any abominable unclean thing, and who eats the flesh of the sacrifice of the peace offering that belongs to the Lord, that person shall be cut off from his people. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, saying, You shall not eat any fat of ox or sheep or goat. The fat of a beast that dies naturally, and the fat of what is torn by wild animals, may be used in any other way, but you shall by no means eat it. Whoever eats the fat of the beast of which men offer an offering made by fire to the Lord, the person who eats of it shall be cut off from his people. Moreover, you shall not eat any blood in any of your dwellings, whether of bird or beast. Whoever eats any blood, that person shall be cut off from his people. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, saying, He who offers a sacrifice of his peace offering to the Lord shall bring his offering to the Lord from the sacrifice of his peace offering. His own hand shall bring it, shall bring the offering made by fire to the Lord. The fat with the beast he shall bring, that the beast may be waved as a wave offering before the Lord. The priest shall burn the fat on the altar, but the beast shall be Aaron's and his sons. Also the right thigh you shall give to the priest as a heave offering for the sacrifice of your peace offerings. He among the sons of Aaron who offers the blood of the peace offering and the fat shall have the right thigh for his part. For the beast, the wave offering, and the thigh of the heave offering, I have taken for the children of Israel from the sacrifice of their peace offerings, and I have given them to Aaron the priest and to his sons from the children of Israel by statute forever. This is the consecrated portion for Aaron and his sons. When the offerings made by fire to the Lord, on the day which Moses presented them to minister to the Lord as priests, the Lord commanded this to be given to them of the children of Israel, on the day that he anointed them, by a statute forever throughout the generations. This is the law of the burnt offering, the grain offering, the sin offering, the trespass offering, the consecrations, and the sacrifice of the peace offering, which the Lord commanded Moses on Mount Sinai, on the day which he commanded the children of Israel to offer their offerings to the Lord in the wilderness of Sinai.
Sound like a repetition of the previous chapters, right? Yes, Ellie.
I think it's neat that you can make soap out of the fat of a dead animal as long as you don't eat it. You just make soap out of it.
Well, the interesting thing is they're talking about the move to the trespass versus the sin.
Right. We'll talk about that a little bit more today, too.
What do they mean when they say cut off from their people? What exactly? What is
There's two Hebrew phrases. One of them is you will be executed.
The other one isn't.
The other one is not. Depends upon the circumstance take place. We have not gone into that particular phrase, but it's a very serious one. You will be banished from the nation of Israel. You will be banished and not be part of the family. You will not be at the, in the day you have to leave the country and live someplace else. You know, that's how serious God is you don't take some of these things that he's reading here, we will find out, for granted or assume he's going to say, okay, I'll forget about that one.
No.
But the very interesting thing about the banishing of people, that's a prophecy that's going to happen deep in the future, because those he's banished, he's going to call back. That's a prophecy of the ones who've been cast out. So it's a prophetic statement. And when I tell you about it, some were executed, that's true. I haven't got any record on it. I just know that I read that story, and I don't know, probably some rabbi from way back when who probably said they executed him. Well, there's no really written record they executed him. But being banished is something that's very, very severe in any family. Now, today, you know, if you disown a son or a daughter, today it's like, who cares? You know, go off and do something else. But boy, many years ago, if you were disowned by the family, especially by the parents, it's not good news for you. Nobody is going to be your friend. Because you violated something very, very serious. Nope. Don't watch where I'm walking. In Leviticus, the 6th chapter, basically the first part of it deals as a continuation, basically, of the 5th chapter. You know, in the Jewish synagogue, Jewish Bible, they break it off at verse 8. Verse 1 to 7 or 1 to 8 is connected with the 5th chapter, if I'm not mistaken. But there's something I want to mention here, very fascinating, because I was asking myself a question, and it had to do with the fifth verse here in the 6th chapter, and I had to do some little bit of minor research to find out what does it mean. You will add a fifth more to it. What does that mean? What is a fifth? Fifth of what? Okay. Well, I had to go back and find out what that meant. In Genesis, the 47th chapter, you recognize this, is under Joseph, right? And he said, "And it shall come to pass in the harvest time that you shall give one-fifth to Pharaoh. 4/5 shall be your own, as seed, your food, your household, and your little ones." So your property, what you own, was divided into 5 parts. Not a tenth of a part, but 5 parts. And so when you look at this thing and to find out what this means by adding a fifth more to it, whatever the person did in stealing or swearing or hiding or whatever he did, extortion, whatever he did, whatever value it is, it was divided into 5 parts. And he had to pay one more part of it. He had to pay another 5th part of it on top of all of that. So, you know, if something happened of a robbery, or he says a bribe took place, or extortion of a neighbor, whatever that was, you could extort a neighbor for, you know, anything, whether it's animal or money or goods or clothing, whatever it was, whatever that value was, quote, end quote, it was divided up into 5 parts. And then you say, okay, 1/5 of it, the guy gets it all back, by the way. But because of what it is, now that you, as a thief or a robber or one who has cheated somebody or did something underhandedly, you must pay now 1/5 of that total value back to him. Let's say, you know, if it was, I don't know, try to think of an example. You know, if you stole a sheet, what's the value of a sheet? Well, then you have to find out what the value is. Basically, the value is based upon what was called the value at the tabernacle based upon the weight of the silver. So whatever that was, the judges or the priests basically would put a value upon that sheep, and let's just say that the value of the sheep was $300. You divide it by 5, And then whatever one-fifth of it is, you had to pay more to it.
Well, it was lost and you know it belongs to somebody else and you don't return it to that person, that you have to...
If it was found, mm-hmm. or if he has found what was lost and lies about it, okay? So it's not that if something was lost and then you find it, you don't have to pay a fine then. You just give it back to the person. Like the sheep ran away and I don't know where it's at, you know? And you find it 2 or 3 days later, it says, oh, there it is out there in the wilderness under the bush, you know? And you pull it back, you know, that point out. But if you lie about it, because you know you really want to kill the sheep and eat yourself, it's bad news for you. So it's kind of interesting to know that about that. Whenever you use the word, by the way, constantly, and we're going to go through some of this. Remember, when you go before the Creator of heaven and earth, what is that word? Korban. Every time you have this word offering standing by itself in the Torah, it's korban, which means you are coming before the Lord. You're not coming before your friend. You're not coming before the governor. You're not coming before a lawyer. You're not coming before, that does have no value. But when you come before the Lord, you come before Yahuwah, all of a sudden, that's a different word, and we have to do this relationship of you're coming before it because you need to make restitution for what took place. And the only one that has to hear the case, or the one that has presence in the case, is Yahuwah himself. And so God does rule in the most insignificant, unimportant, and minor issues in life. That we come before him and we are going to do a presentation before him. We're going to present something to him. And they talk about the transgression. What is the transgression offering? What is a transgression offering in Hebrew? It's different than a sin offering. Transgression offering is basic. It's once called, later translated, you have been found guilty of doing something. That's called a transgression offering or a shame. Not I'm ashamed, but a shame. That's a Hebrew word, meaning you must pay restitution for what you have done. And that's why it's called here a trespass offering rather than a sin offering. What was the sin offering? David, a sin offering?
Missing the mark.
You're falling short of the commandments of God. Not necessarily falling short that you've died and been found responsible for what's taking place. Okay? As we go through Leviticus, the sixth chapter, now starts breaking up into different parts, different categories. Every time the word says, and Yahuwah spoke unto Moses, saying, there's now a new commandment or a new order, a new statement being made. It's like, you must stop there for a moment and say, okay, now Yahuwah is talking. What is he saying? It's not what Moses is saying, it's what God is saying to us or to the individual. And he says, and Aaron said unto his, he says, command Aaron and his sons. This is the first one we have here in verse 9 of Leviticus. Now there is a stop. Yahuwah is talking. He's saying, I want you to give this order, we'll talk about order in a minute, unto Aaron and his sons, not to the house of Israel, not to the descendants of any other tribes, but just to the priesthood. Okay? And it says, now here's where the word, it says, and this law, that law, by the way, is the word Torah. This is the Torah of the Holah offering. They're telling Aaron and his sons how you are to handle the Holah offering. And there are certain orders, there are certain precepts, certain ways in which you must deal with this thing. And we'll see at the end of the seventh chapter that one of those statements is to be why all this was given unto the priesthood is because there was something very important that God wanted them to keep in order of what to do. They didn't do it casually. They had to do it in precise steps in order that they came. And now the fire must be there on the whole offering. The fire must be kept on burning until all the way until the night and then all the way into the morning. So they had to keep the fire going at all times on the altar for any taint that took place. Remember, Torah, the basic root word for Torah is what? Yah, or Yair, which means really to teach. Okay? It says in Exodus, the 4th chapter, verse 12, it says, therefore go, and I will be with your mouth and Torah you when you say what you shall say. So when Moses went before Pharaoh, he had to be taught by God what to say. So every time Moses went before God, what did God do? He told Moses what to say. He taught Moses exactly what to say. And therefore, Moses repeated the words of the Creator of heaven and earth in order to that Pharaoh may know. The basic word is, that means basic comes from the basically flow, being the flowing of water or flowing of information or flowing forth something that's coming out of the Creator's heaven and earth's mouth, and it's going to be coming forth and giving it to the person that he's sending it to. Remember, we talk about out of your belly will come flowing forth a living water. All right, that means the teachings will come forth from out of your mouth to teach your children and to teach your friends, to teach your neighbor. It'll be what you say is a teaching process to somebody else. Most of you, in fact, one of us has learned from somebody who has spoken to us, right? Out of their mouth came forth the understanding. Out of their mouth came forth the instruction. Out of their mouth came forth the teaching. So when we think about the Torah, it's coming out of the mouth of the Creator of heaven and earth. And when it comes out, he says, I will teach you, Moses, what to say. And he uses the word yara, which means to teach. And the word Torah comes from that word yara, the teaching or the teachings. It's a noun in this case. Torah is a noun, which is a teaching, ing form. Okay? Anyway, as we go through this briefly, in the 6th chapter, the priest shall put it on his linen. He must do certain things in a certain order, a certain process, in which he will have to carry out what the teaching is all about. Now, remember, this is a law, or this is a Torah of the whole offering. This is what the priest must do, Aaron and his sons must do, and they must put on this garment. They must keep the fire going all day and all night, must never go out, and so on and so forth. And it goes on to talking about another one about the burnt offering, which is called the shalomim, or the peace offering. And we went through that before, but peace offering. Remember, we had identification with the ark. In this chapter and the next chapter, it talks to basically to the priesthood and how you are to handle it. And you remember the book of Hebrews? What's the function of the priest? To offer unto God what people are giving to them. Not me, unto God. And so here we talk about a whole offering. It's something that somebody is giving unto Yahuwah. Not given unto the priesthood, not given unto Aaron, not given because it gone to him. Now God gives the option whether he is going to say, I will give this to Aaron and his sons. But not everything that you offer unto God is given to Aaron and his sons. A whole offering is one that's not given unto Aaron. The whole thing is given unto God, and nothing is being withheld from God in that point in time. We have learned some new words here today, just briefly. I'm going to go through an awful lot of definitions today. And verse 14, he says, now the Torah of the Menhach offering. He's still talking to the priesthood. Still talking to Aaron and his son. This is what you will do. And because a Menhach is also an offering. It's not a commanded one, except in relationship to a certain sin offering, which we already read, and we'll go into a little bit later on. We'll see here, we're looking at that the sons of Aaron shall offer it on the altar before Yahuwah. So it is the job to function a certain way, in a certain pattern. Now we say, okay, what value is that to us? Well, what is the value to us? Well, you keep that in mind, because you have to ask that self a question. What does this all mean? Because this is the law of the Torah, or this is the teaching of the Torah. Yes?
Well, something that comes, that this to me is really impacting, is I do things because I'm rushing around a lot. And recently, I did something that was a death penalty. I mean, Americans would say, what? Because that's silly. But according to the scripture, in Exodus, it was a death penalty. Took me about, 30 seconds to do it. Now, my death penalty is covered by Messiah. And I accept that. And I'm not under a death penalty. I'm free of that. However, I feel really bad about it. I did it because I was careless. And then I thought, rats. And then I fixed it. But it wouldn't have happened if I'd been careful to start with. That bothers me. And I'm wondering if it is possible, because, and I'm experimenting with it, I guess, when I've done something that was just stupid, and yet in here, in Exodus, death penalty, if I can make an offering, not because I owe something, but because I need to be careful, and I need to be able to feel like it cost me. Is that silly?
Well,
go ahead.
One thing that might be interesting in that is perhaps that is the role of the Thanksgiving offerings. Because as you mentioned, the sin offering and the guilt offering has already been provided by Messiah. Well, what is the role of the Thanksgiving offering? You're thankful for what God has done.
I'm thankful that I am not under it.
Yeah.
And I don't have to fulfill that death penalty
so
for a second event.
Yep. That's what the Apostle Paul was getting at in Romans chapter 12, with relating that to the Thanksgiving offering. You've already been cleared.
Yeah.
So then what then,
what now you offer.
Yeah, exactly. So now you're...
In 12th chapter, tells you, I was going to read that 12th chapter, but that's, that's exactly what we're talking about. Be a living sacrifice. Now, this is what you do from this point
I'm
on.
I'm finding that I can't just sneak out of it, which I would like to do. See, I don't want it to cost a lot. And so, because this happened yesterday, and I told God, I need to make it right. I don't know what to do. And then I thought, well, let me tell you, I'm going to be more careful. Because to nobody else, what I did is last night I did not light my candles soon enough. Because I was busy doing things, and 4:45, and in my arrogance, I get the Friday night light notification, and I knew that the candle lighting was at 4:43. Now, I don't need to bother with that. I don't use that to light my candles because I know it's 18 minutes ahead. I use that to know what time sundown is. So I know that that sundown is 20 minutes after 4:43. So I didn't light my light at 4:43. I was busy and we had company for a minute, and I turn around and 9 minutes after 5. And I thought, I probably didn't miss it. It was still a little bit out, so I lit them really fast. And then I went back and I thought, okay, no big deal. From 4:43 to 5:09 is more than 18 minutes. So, sundown. I lit them anyway. Now, I'm writing my Torah, and in Exodus 35, which I just finished, it says, don't light a fire in your house on Sabbath. It's a death penalty. And I just did. I thought, let's just ignore it and just don't think about it. Except it's there needling me.
Yeah. Last night, I didn't get home until 9 o'clock. I needed a new battery in my side.
Right.
We got the new battery and put it in.
All the things.
Yeah, so I got home and I'm going, shoot.
Yeah.
I can't watch my
room. And the fire's not going?
No, my fire was...
The fire was going?
Yeah. I didn't have the light.
Okay.
My fire. And, you know, I always have cold.
Right. In the house.
Yeah.
I didn't have any, and I had already... Well, see, I wouldn't have been able to, we hadn't lit our Sabbath candles or anything. And so I found a way, I will pay that which came to my mind, which is a hunk. And now I feel good about it. Because, yeah, I wouldn't have had light today. I could have called you and had light for today. But I didn't. And so it was costly, but you know, I'm going to be really, I'm going to stop being so arrogant that, oh, I use that Friday night light so that I know what time sundown is. Cotton Pickin, they send it to me so that I light the candles at 4:43. I don't have to light my Sabbath candles. All I have to do is get a fire going.
Okay.
And
okay, I just want to interrupt you for just a minute.
Yes.
Because remember, there is one that says here about the sin offering.
Uh-huh.
What is a sin?
Missing the mark.
Right. Falling short.
Right.
Unintentionally, but you did. Or intentionally. That means you actually could do it intentionally doing it. That's different than a transgression one.
Well, see,
okay.
Mine,
but okay. I clarify that, but because I know what you're saying, what you're thinking about. But you know, I'm saying that we have the Messiah that says in the book of Romans, Romans there about now we have the transforming of our mind. It takes a while. And he said, now by the grace or the offering or the blessing that God's given you, this is what you are to do. And we do that. We try it.
See, I've never paid penalty on much of anything unless God hit me over the head with it and I had to. I am not a willing penalty payer person.
Most of us in our life have never had to pay a penalty for our transgressions and our sins and our iniquities. We have not. I haven't.
But every...
Yeah.
Yes, you have.
When? I've never lost anything.
Yeah.
I've never had to go and pay God anything.
No.
That I can think of.
Well, no offense. So I'm trying to be offensive here. But each one of us, if we do something that God says I'm not pleased with, typically what I've noticed, no, I can't speak to everybody, but the people I have observed, you do pay a penalty. You pay a penalty of God taking something that you want away.
Okay, I understand that one, but wait.
No,
but I'm not paying him.
Yes,
he takes something away.
Okay,
I didn't say I wanted this to gone.
Well, who wants payment gone? I mean, we all the same thing.
Okay, well, you might have a point, but I'm just saying.
To be fair, and God works with each person differently. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that one statement. But to be fair, if I use something that I know full well I shouldn't be doing. No, blatantly, you know what? I did something wrong here. Shouldn't have done it. Don't worry about it. God'll take care of it. Invariably, at some point in time, in the very near future, something that I did want to occur or God need God's help with
was removed.
Fails miserably.
Yep.
But you know what? This failure was more valuable to me than whatever my whatever I did wrong was.
Yes.
I can't say it happens in every circumstance, but when I do notice it, I notice it.
But it does.
That was the penalty that God took from me. That was what I had to pay. Had I just said, stop, God, I wish to repay this item, whatever it was, plus whatever was reasonable, at that moment in time, only once have I successfully thought about that moment in time. And at the time which I needed something else to happen, it was successful.
That's what
okay.
I'm finding.
I know I have to be more cognizant of my actions. Yes, my heart's factored. Yes, I realize that God pays for it in many different ways. But that doesn't mean I get to say, okay, it doesn't matter anymore. Well, it does still matter.
It does still matter.
God still records the stuff. He still notes. Yeah, I will require this of you. He doesn't require dollar amount necessarily. He doesn't require a death penalty necessarily. But something does get taken away. So that I know I did something I shouldn't have done.
Yes.
Okay.
God does to you too. He's done it to me. I've seen that in at least my family's lives.
Yeah.
Well, and actually, while you were talking, a good example of this is David and Bathsheba's first child dying.
Yeah.
David was the king. He didn't at least as far as I can remember, there's no record of him going and offering any sacrifices to pay for what he did. There's no, you know, he didn't get judicially in trouble or anything. There was a, but God took the child, and they did pay that penalty that way.
Okay, I understand penalty, okay, but I'm asking a self question, okay? When I look at the book of Romans and it tells you, this is what I, quote, now, if I could explain it, this is what now I, quote, sacrifice. All right, don't you understand what I'm saying? Not because I owe anything. The death penalty is finished for me. And I have a multitude of the love of the Creator of heaven and earth has covered and will cover multitudes of sins. We have not gotten to the point where he says, by the way, I will even cover those sins up, which no one knows, not even you. I will cover them up. I will blot them out. And you'll never have to worry about looking at them ever again. Now, in the book of Romans, I'm just, forgive me for a minute. I mean, I'm not saying I disagree with you people. I understand what you're saying. But I'm looking at this thing and I'm saying, okay. And I said to myself, I have never, ever had to actually go out and pay a heavy price for, you know, and for the sacrifice to call by and unto God. Okay? I never brought something to God and say, I'm giving you this one for what I have been found guilty
that's
about.
Not,
okay?
I don't think that's what I'm saying. That's not what Daniel's saying either.
Okay.
Normally, I have been able, if I've done something like that, to just chalk it up to, wow, I did it wrong, erase. It's not getting erased so quickly now. And now I'm spotting it. So I know he's training me to be more careful. It's and maybe, Jeff, you hit it. Maybe it's a Thanksgiving that I did it. I did want to do it because I thought, okay, just don't look at it. Just light it. And I thought, and then I sat down and had to address the fact. No, it was after sundown. I had the option of calling Pat and say, Pat, would you bring light tomorrow? And doing without light last night. I didn't want to do without. I could have accepted that as the penalty, not having light, which is what I should have done. Okay? But I didn't. So I need to make an offering. It's not that God's requiring it. I need to. For my own.
Okay, that's a free will.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Which is different.
Right. I understand that. And okay. Let's get on with our... Do you have zip now?
I don't get me wrong. I understand that we're kind of talking about two different things. In one that you're arguing, which as far as I can tell, that yeah, okay, I did the wrong. Here is the prescribed item to repay it with. No, that's not happening anymore. I understand that.
That's not happening anymore.
However, that doesn't mean that the penalty isn't still extracted from you. No offense to personal lives, but you have many daughters who have seven
right.
times their lives greatly disliked.
No, then a lot of them still do.
Yeah. You know, those, to my mind, are still penalties from God.
Yeah.
Now,
I'm not arguing with that point. I'm not talking about. I'm not arguing about penalties. I agree with penalties.
So let me finish, please. If I cause a great sin, whatever the sin may be, for those who measure it, and I cause something that okay, I have done that isn't fair or isn't right, whatever you argue with, that God says this should be the normal penalty payment. And I ignore it. Just plain ignore it. What can I expect? Well, the observation, not just of you, but of my siblings, of my wife's family, of people around me, I see that the penalties that just because I ignored it or said God just pretended didn't do it, it covered up, and didn't bother to say, okay, please God, I wish to offer this as a payment. As opposed to God, you selecting what your payment's going to be. There's a difference.
It's not my
Okay, I understand what you're saying.
There's a difference because although
God does specifically say what payment to pay.
Well, exactly, and if we ignore it, he says, okay,
right.
I'm going, as example with David, I'm going to select this.
Yeah.
Because I ignored it.
Right.
I didn't say, God, you know I did the wrong. I realize that I can never repay what the prescribed requirement is. Unless I cover that, if I understand that. But I wish that you will, or pray that you will not select randomly, what I think randomly, maybe a greater payment than what I can tolerate. Please take this, whatever it may be, in lieu of you selecting a payment, because I not only sinned against you, but then I sinned by ignoring it on top of it.
Right.
Meaning, not pretending it didn't happen, just saying, God, just corrupt and well done. I think that those are still big factors, because I see them, I observe them. Oh, you know, so-and-so, they should have, guess what? Oh, look what God's done. Holy cow, if that person had just done something a little bit differently, that wouldn't have happened or may not have happened. I observe that all the time in my own life and my siblings' lives.
I'm seeing it too.
So it's like, okay, there are things that we do wrong that, yes, God doesn't kill us for it. He doesn't require a death penalty for it, but he still requires an acknowledgement.
I have no problem with that one.
And then God is like, I choose this to pay it. If you're not going to pay it back, I will extract my payment from you. And it seems to be, in David's case, far greater than David would have liked. You know what? God, kill me instead. Kill me instead. That's the fair payment. But no, a greater one. I'm taking your son. That's tougher. Because David tried to cover it up.
How many blessings do we miss having? Because, and I maybe ignore this more than most people because I just like to go on and forget. But how many blessings that almost come my way and then bypass me, and almost and then bypass me, were because I didn't take the time to own up. And to me, it's like a parent, and to me, God, like the dad, if Isaac comes in and he just ate one of the cookies that was on the table, and he was told not to, and he's in trouble because he was told not to, and he suffers his spanking, swat, whatever, for doing it because he was told not to, and he comes in and he says, I did it on purpose, and gives you his car that he likes, and you put that away.
Yeah.
It's just a way of acknowledging, accepting the judgment. It's not a buy you out, but it's a way of acknowledging, accepting the judgment.
Okay, I've got to go on here. I'm going to run out of time here if you don't mind.
Sorry.
In the 17th verse here, it talks about the Minhah offering, which is called the Holy of Holies, or the Kadosh Kadoshim. And he also introduces now another clause that the Chatah, or the sin offering, and the Hashem offering are also the same category with God. So when there is a sin offering or a trespass offering or a guilt offering to God, that is the most precious thing that does the job. And then the priest, after that's been done, then therefore the priest gives an atonement for that to either the transgression or of the sin offering. So when we go to the Messiah and we offer unto him and we give unto him what we need to give unto him, whatever it may be, whatever you feel may be, that he now has to offer, he does offer unto the eternal creator of heaven and earth, his Father, he does offer a atonement for it. Yeah, and you know, that's the hope that I see within the book of Leviticus, that it's always constantly, they say, you'll be forgiven, you'll be forgiven, and you'll be forgiven. We know that on the physical thing took place here, and the book of Leviticus is a very earthy, if I can use that terminology, picture of how God deals with not only sins and transgressions, but even deals with your free will offering, and we're not into that yet. I'll talk about the Torah offering or the Thanksgiving offering, and the other one of the peace offering. Those are free will offerings. Those are your giving, and sometimes that one is called the peace offering can be given as a Torah offering at the same time. At certain times you give it in certain places in certain order. But so what I'm talking about here is the book of Leviticus 6th chapter. So far we got in here, he's talking about how the priest is to handle all of these things in a certain precise way. And so I'm looking at this thing. I'm trying to say, what is it? What value is it for us today? What are we learning from all of this? Are we learning all these very down-to-earth things for a purpose and for a reason? Or are we just kind of saying, let's get past it and let's go on and do something else?
I think what it points out to me is the seriousness and how seriously God takes how we treat our neighbors, how we treat our friends, the integrity that we walk in, honesty, you know, whether anybody's looking or not. And that's really probably the biggest.
Right. And if I'm focusing in on the sixth chapter, though, okay, and the seventh chapter. It's focusing in on not you. It's focusing in on the priesthood. And do you understand what I'm saying? It's focusing here. Verse 24, and Yahuwah spoke unto Moses, saying, speaking to Aaron and his sons, saying, this is the Torah. This is the Torah of the sin offering. This is the Torah of the and it's most holy unto me. So he's telling the priesthood how to handle it. That tells us something about how God looks at what we are doing when we bring forth a kaban unto him. This is how our Messiah actually deals with it. Do you understand what I'm saying? This is very my personal opinion. I'm trying to look at what is written and say, what is the story talking about? We already read the fourth chapter and the fifth chapter of definitions of sin and transgressions and all that. Now, we're presenting it now. This tells us, okay, now, Aaron and your sons, this is how you are to handle it. So it's not just an instruction. The fourth chapter and fifth chapter tells us what we are doing wrong. Or how we should do it. What we should bring to God. In the sixth chapter, the seventh chapter now, it's talking about how the high priest will handle it. And so everything is in order with God. Nothing is out of order with God. And I look at this thing, what I'm trying to say today is, what I think is very fascinating and very believable to me, is that when you sin and transgress, or when you do something and you want to bring on your knees, you're bringing a kala to God. You're bringing it into him. Tell him, this is my sin, this is my transgression, this is what I've done wrong. And he takes it, and he does something with it. His son handles it. His son deals with it. His son puts an atonement there between you and the Father. That's the will of the Father. And so what I'm saying is, we're learning the book of Leviticus. We went through the first chapter, second chapter, third chapter, fourth chapter, fifth chapter. Now we're in the sixth chapter, and we're going to be in the seventh chapter. And the eighth chapter is even more detail of the priesthood. And so we're looking at this thing, and so this is the function of our Messiah and how he handles with us, what he does for us. No matter how important the thing is, and this one talks about individual type of sins, yes, and then how the priest is to deal with it. The priest is not supposed to come in and make a judgment against you. The priest is not to come up because you are bringing a kaban unto you. You're bringing an offering unto you. You're coming to God and saying, this is what my problem is. This is my sin. This is my transgression. This is what I have done. This is my iniquities. This is the book of Leviticus telling us how God has set it up from the very beginning, showing us to teach this. It's always been that way. And now he's had to take a physical thing here, physical animals, physical grain, physical thing, in order to have a picture of what he is trying to tell. He has, quote, an out for us. And that out is the priesthood. And this particular physical case is Aaron, the priesthood. But our priesthood, he also handles it, and it's a picture of how he deals with it. You understand what I'm saying? This is the purpose of the sixth chapter and the seventh chapter, and go on into the eighth chapter. Now, briefly, the seventh chapter is another repetition. He's continuing on verse chapter 7, verse 1, of what the priest is to do, and it's the Torah of the transgression offering, the Torah of this most holy unto him, and the place where you should be able to be a whole offering, and it shall be for the transgression of the offering, for the sin offering. All these things, he's going back over again and telling exactly what the priesthood should do and should not do, how the priest should handle it. And in a way, it's telling us how the Messiah, our high priest, handles it for us. He's telling us how he is doing it, because he will not transgress the law. He said not one jot or one tittle, not an insignificant part, will ever be removed until it is completely finished. And it's not finished with God yet, because the whole world has yet to see this. The whole world has yet to feel and know and understand every jot and every tittle, including these little things that seem like, okay, let's go through the laboriousness of the physical things here, learn the physical things here. But in the bottom line, it says, I am doing this for you. And I went through the veil of veils. I went through that veil. By the way, you know what the word veil means in Hebrew? It's a word means that which is torn, or what that which breaks apart. That gorgeous veil with the two cherubims on it, beautiful colors. That Hebrew, that word means broken one, or the one that's broken, or in a future sense, is going to be torn down and ripped apart. But we don't see that. We don't. When we look at the veil, we think how beautiful it is. But it kept us from something. It broke a barrier. The barrier was there. And what did it say? I don't know what book it is right off hand. I think it was, you see the Philippians, the Corinthians, I don't know, Colossians. He's broken down the veil that's in between us. The barrier between us. He's broken it down. Because in the very prophecy of the very Holy of Holies, and this veil being here, it was planted by God. I am going to break it. I am going to tear it apart. It's no longer going to be. And so when you think about these things, and the Messiah did all these things, and when he walked through that veil, and he walked through it, he broke down that thing, and now we have at one with God. We really have at one now with God. This is how I see. Maybe I've got it all wrong. When I look at the functions of the high priest and watching what the word tells about the high priest to do and how he is to do it, even to the point where even if a high priest or a member of his house even partakes of the peace offering, and he's also handled now an unclean thing, he it will be what? Removed out and never be participating with ever again in the place of the priesthood. It's here about that, about the Thanksgiving offering, verse 12 of chapter 7. And he shall offer a Todah offering. Then he shall offer and the sacrifice of the Todah of Matzot. with cake and the matzot flour. Now this is a Thanksgiving offering. It's the verse 13. It says, and then there's one about the offering of the matzah and the Torah for his shalomim offering. Do you understand what I'm saying? And now the priest has to do something about that, and the priest has to make sure he doesn't do something he should not. Okay. And verse 14, another word comes in here. It's called the wave offering or the heave offering. In Hebrew, that means nothing but a contribution offering. Offering that the problem is giving as a contribution to God. And the priest now takes it, and it's and this is the one that belongs to him. Because he said, now next year you do not do anything with thinking of the priest shall not do certain things. So you do understand what I'm saying so far? And I'm looking at these things, and we know that the Messiah would never touch anything that's unclean, or did he? You know, we have to ask ourselves some really heavy questions here now. Did he ever touch a dead body?
Yes.
Oh, does it mean he's disqualified?
No.
No?
The body didn't stay that way.
Yeah. The body didn't stay that way, because he's the one that brings forth life, not death. Yes.
Well, also, like the Torah talks about, like if you do have to deal with a dead body or whatnot, there are certain things you should be doing, and you should be outside the camp for a certain amount of time. Then you can go back and do your job. But this is saying that if you touch something unclean and you pretend that you didn't do anything unclean and you're still doing your priestly job, that is when
you're
God
out of out. The picture. You're no longer part of the priesthood. No longer part of, and you were excommunicated. If I can use that word. Remember, we haven't gone that part in Leviticus yet. We'll find that even the high priest cannot touch a dead body when he's functioning as a high priest. He can't. Even if it's his wife, even if it's his daughter, even if it's his son, he can't. Because he's functioning something, he's doing something far more important. Now, we have the Messiah, when he was on the cross, what did he say to his father? Why have you forsaken me? Wow. Not even the Father would touch a dead and dying body. Why? What? Is that the purpose behind it all? Well, no, because he resurrected him back up again. Because that's what God does. For that dead and that dying body. It was a dead and dying body on the cross. It wasn't a living body. It was a dying body. It was the atoning body. It was a body that goes through and paid the price and said, this is the veil. I'm breaking down and tearing down this veil. And I'm doing this because I want you people, I want house of Israel, and I want all mankind to come and see me, talk to me, be with me, be part of my world. I am your Father. I'm the one that made you. I'm the one that created you. I have certain things that I have great future for you. And I have to let you know that I had to do this and bring forth a physical thing. It's basically here in the book of Leviticus, the 6th and 7th and 8th chapter, to show you how my son had to go through these things, literally, so you understand, when the high priest and the priesthood went through the literally of all the different offerings that are there, and only two of them, the sin offering and the transgression offering, are called what? Holy of Holies. The most holy of holy. Why isn't they thanksgiving offering called that? Why isn't, you know, the other offerings of a Shalom offering, why is that not there? Show me offering. Why is it not one of those then? He's only talking about those two. Because it has something to do with his son. That becomes holy to him. That is important to him. That's the one that matters. That offering is valuable to me. And we know that a sin offering depends upon who you are. We haven't gone through that yet. It depends upon who you are and what offering you give as a sin offering. What offering to do? There's certain things that God has said, I want this as an offering. He'll even go down to the final one. If you don't even have anything, okay, I want a minhah offering from you. But it must not have oil in it. Must not have frankincense in it. It just must be the grain only. So God brings it all the way down from a very expensive, quote, animal, all the way down to the cheapest thing you can think of, and that's a piece of bread. I mean, not a piece of bread, but flour. That's been crushed and made fine, and no leavening in it. There is no oil in it. There's no frankincense in it. And he said, that's most holy to me. Now, all this representation of just who the Messiah is, how he's going to handle it, and going through all this thing that we can understand, I hope we can understand a little bit today, of the sacrifices, that's very, very important. Last part of chapter 7. I'm not going to go through all the 7 because you read it yourself. You got a good, you know, what I'm trying to say is very important. Maybe it's not. Okay. The end of the chapter, verse 37. Now he's still talking, this is how you are to handle it, O Aaron and sons of Aaron. This is the Torah of the Hola offering. This is the Torah of the Minhah offering. This is the Torah of the Chatah offering. This is the Torah of the Hashem offering. This is the contribution, means putting things in precise order, setting the process, and the sacrifice of the Shalim offering. This is what it's all about. All the things we read in chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, chapter 4, chapter 5, and now chapter 6, into the chapter 7 is, this is how, this is what it's all about. And we have that word law, law, law. And I know it says law, but understand that the law is teaching us something. What is it that these offerings teaching us? Well, we look at here in chapter 5, 6, and 7. It's teaching us how God, we already learned in chapter 1, 2, and 3 what they are. Then 4 and 5, we find out, okay, this is what sin is. This is what transgression is. This is what iniquity is. This is what all that stuff is. Okay, I've got that. Now what? And you bring it unto God. Now we find out what God says, this is how I'm going to handle it. And he handles it exactly in this same order. It may be confusing. It may be if you say, well, this is ancient and has no bearing upon what happened. But all this physical stuff and putting things in concise, putting them in the exact order, certain places, certain ways of doing things, and how, where the blood is to be poured, where, what to do with the, with the, with the bird, what do you do with the goat, what do you do with the animal, what do you do with the hide, what do you do with this, what do you do with that, and everything is in precise order. What do you do with the menhach? What do you do with that handful? What do you do with it? And he tells the precise order and what you must do, the priesthood must do. Even when we learn in chapter 4 and 5 that when you brought a kalin unto God and you had to lay your hands upon it, the priest had to go from that point on and continue the process. So when you sin and you transgress and you put your hands upon whatever it is, you know, I don't care what's, but spiritually or whatever you feel internally, there is something very, very important. Because what you are asking, you're asking for the high priest to take this to your father. That's the ultimate thing you're asking. Whatever it is, whether it's a thanksgiving offering, a shalomim offering, a minhach offering, a torah offering, a shalim offering, whatever it is. You are presenting it and you wanted to give it to the Father. You wanted to give it to God. You wanted to give it to the Creator of heaven and earth because you want to do His will more than anybody else's will. Do you fall short? Yeah, we do. Do I fall short? Oh, yeah. And what Daniel's saying here, you know, my daughter can tell you how many times I have fallen short and fallen short and fallen short with it. And they'll tell you. I'm not going to hold it. I'm not going to listen to that because, well, maybe I should, right? No, I should be feel guilty all the days of my life. No, I don't. Because God said, I will take it. You're a stupid man, Richard, but I took it. You did something really stupid with your daughter. Yeah, but I took it. Oh, thank you, God. I am not the righteous man in the world. I'm not capable of being the righteous man in the world. I don't have it in me to be the righteous man in the world. But I have a creator of heaven and earth. And I have an apostle. I mean, I have our apostle. I have a high priest that says, yeah, all is written down and all the stupid things, the dumb things, sin, transgression, iniquity you have done since you were born. And I've got them all down here now. Do you want me to wipe it clean? Or do you want me to kind of rewrite it back down on you? Well, what do you want from me? I want you to remove it. I want to die. Not a righteous man. I don't want to die. I want to die a man that is not found and held crimes against me. I want to die a man that does not have the sins and transgressions that I have to wake up and face eternal death with. I don't want that. And I look at Leviticus, and I look at these incredible offerings that God is doing here. And he says, I'm going out of my way. I'm going to show you now how, no matter how wealthy you are or how poor you are, I have an out for you. And my son, I will show you what he's doing. I have commanded the high priest what to do. My son does this for you. Daily, may I say. I can't keep on living what, quote, I did 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago. I can't do that. Well, I have to look forward. I have to go on. I have to put those things behind me. You know, the book of Hebrews says, you know, when the transgressions are gone and all you've done, that's done. But let's go beyond the very fundamental things and let's go on with what's called perfection. Let's go on living with God. Let's go on reading what He's saying. Let's go on and find out what His talk, whatever jot, whatever tittle there is, help us to see it and understand it. I beseech God tremendously that I may understand. Maybe I don't understand. Maybe God is saying, no, I'm not going to let you understand because you're not qualified to understand. You don't fit up to understanding. You don't fit into the pattern. I'm going to sin. I'm going to transgress. I'm not going to die a person that doesn't sin. I'm going to be a person that's going to fall short. I'm a person that's going to do something that's, quote, inequity. I'm going to be certain to be found guilty. But I don't have a creator in heaven and earth that says to me, I will remove them. For I am kind. I am long-suffering. I am compassionate. And I'll have mercy upon whom I will have mercy. And today, regardless of my past and regardless of my present, I feel very much that He has granted me a tremendous amount of mercy. He's granted me a tremendous amount of favor. Not earned, not deserved. I don't have that. All I can present to God is, quote, sin offerings, quote, transgression offerings, quote, iniquity offerings. Boy, you know, He wants more than that. He wants a whole lot more than that. I've dedicated my time, best I ever can. When I started at the age of 18, I didn't realize I was 18. Right? I was 18. I was a junior. I was a senior in high school, and I graduated at 19. But I was 18 when I started. And all of a sudden, the Word of God started starting. I want to know, what does it say? Who? What's this? I didn't know what the Bible was about. I had no idea what the Bible was about. Literally ignorant of it. For some strange reason, God brought me into studying it. I don't know why. Maybe because He put me into His mind. And he actually thought about me at the age of 18. Now, have I lived up to God from that point until I'm what? How old am I? 60-something? 60-plus? Have I lived up to it? No. Have I fallen short? Yes. Have I made you mad? Yes. Have I upset you? Yes. Have I made you feel intimidated? Yes. Have I made you feel stupid? Yes. What else does Richard not do? I'm very dedicated. And I believe God. I trust God. And this is my only hope. Yeah, there's a lot of faults I've got. And every one of you can point them out to me. Every one of you can point. Now, this is it. You've probably got 20 or 30 of them you can point. Fine. Keep on writing. Keep on pointing. I cannot live that way. I don't find fault with you people. I tried to tell this before. I don't find fault. I don't look at flaws. I don't look at mistakes. I don't look at you falling short. I don't look at you in that fashion at all. I look at you as a tree that's growing, that fruit is being brought forth. The Creator of heaven and earth is going to finish His will out because He said, whatever I began in you, I will complete it. I will finish it. I started a good work in you, and I'm going to finish it. You're going to hear a sermon from me not too very long from now about what's called good works. And God started it. I didn't, and you didn't. And God's going to finish it. Not me, not you. He's going to finish it. Our job, my job, if I could say my job, if I call it a job, is to get into this book, read what it says, see where the Messiah is at, see the function of the Messiah, see what the Messiah does, and see everything, and which is a very confusing thing because it's a fleshly thing. It's an earthly thing. Very earthy here in the book of Leviticus. So far, by the way, you have not known. If you have no, we don't even know what's clean and unclean is yet, do you? We're not there yet. All of a sudden, we said, "Okay, clean and unclean." Clean. Who was that? What's that? Dead body? What's dead? What's this? What's a clean animal? What's an unclean animal? What are you talking about here? Now you say, "Oh, I already know because I already read the book ahead of time." Hunky dory, good. But when we get to that point. Got to listen. I hope you will listen because I'm going to tell you what it says. It's very important to understand why there's clean and unclean animals. It's not because they are, and the Apostle Paul says, of and by themselves are clean or unclean. They're not by of and by themselves. They do what God prayed them to do. They do it. However, there's a function in us. I'm sorry. Verse 38. Yahushua commanded Moses on Mount Sinai. Remember, this started out at the temple, at the tabernacle. These laws, these commandments, these statutes, these Torahs were taught to Moses on Mount Sinai the first time he was up there, as well as at the tabernacle. You know, when God said, I spoke unto Moses, I told you I'm a person that really strongly believes that God really did speak to him. I'm a person that really believes that God did not lie to him. I'm a person that really believes that God knew what he was talking to him because he's Moses. I'm going to Torah your words. I'm going to teach you what to say. Not just to Pharaoh, but to your house of Israel. And to the generations farther on down. On the day that he commanded the children of Israel to offer, to Kaban their offerings to Yahuwah in the wilderness of Sinai.